Happy holidays from us here at Painting Corners. We just want to thank you guys for everything. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for liking the show. Thank you for sharing us with your friends, whether it be listening, retweeting, sharing on Facebook. We just want you guys to know that we appreciate you guys. Dave and I have thoroughly enjoyed this so far, and we will continue to enjoy it in the coming months. I mean, we're doing this because we love it, and we love you guys. So here's a little compilation of every player interview to date, some of our favorite clips. The only person who doesn't have a clip is Kevin Shackelford, because of the fact that the audio went kind of haywire on me. So hope you enjoy it, you guys. You played for Augie. You know, we lost Augie this year. Can you give us a sense of what it was like to be around and play for him?
You know, Augie's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of figure that I was so blessed and lucky to be around for 2 years, his last 2 years at Texas. And we became really good friends, real close, and it's hard. It's hard to put into words what he meant to Texas, what he meant to college baseball. But he was just such a great mentor, and you know, I've learned so much just, you know, thinking back on things he says. I'll jot them down, and that way I don't forget them. But it's it's awesome, because anywhere I go, you know, now that I'm in minor league baseball, they always ask, how was it playing for Augie? And I said, he hasn't changed. You know, he was the same guy that you saw in the videos on YouTube, and the same caring and loving guy that was there for you no matter what. So he was definitely something special, and just to have him as a just to say that I got to play for the best ever is something I'll definitely cherish and never take for granted.
What was your favorite moment as a Texas Longhorn, and was it that home run in Corpus Christi against Texas A&M Corpus Christi?
Absolutely. That you nailed it right on the button. That was such a cool experience, just coming down, you know, and I played in Waterbury Field all throughout high school.
Beautiful field.
I played against, oh, it's such a great ballpark, and they do such a good job with it. And it sent chills down your spine, you know, to do it at home in your hometown in front of all your friends and family, and getting the curtain call and going out there and just sort of soaking it in. It was my junior year was sort of the turning point to my season, where after that, I sort of turned it on and finished off strong throughout the rest of the season. But that was definitely something. Even now, being in Corpus, people will sit and say, hey, I was at that game. I remember that game. And that was so cool to be a part of it. And so it just, hometown boy making it out of Corpus and playing for the University of Texas, it's something special down here.
I had a pretty good high school baseball coach and summer ball coach, and you know, he was big on, he referred to it as meat and potatoes, that you need to take as many ground balls as you possibly can. Just like getting at bats, you get better by the more at bats you get. He said, the more ground balls you take, you know, the more confident you're going to get, the more fundamental you'll be. So we would start out by, you know, every day, you know, whether it was start of the summer or start of the fall, he would go out and hit me 100 ground balls. And he was like, you're going to hit 100 ground, you're going to get 100 ground balls, and you're going to field 100 cleanly. And you know, the next day it was, you know, you field 100 cleanly. The next day it was 110. The day after that was 120. So, you know, he emphasized fundamentals, repetition, muscle memory, you know, doing things the right way. You know, they always say practice makes perfect, but if you practice the wrong way, you know, you're not going to be successful all the time. So he always said perfect practice makes perfect. So there's a lot of repetitions, man. A lot of repetitions builds confidence. Obviously, you know, game of baseball, about confidence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how you get better. My favorite memory, I think individually, my favorite memory was I was a freshman at DH the first series against Florida State. opening ACC series, I ended up hitting a home run the first game. So that kind of set the tone and said, you know what? You know, I can play here. I can succeed. I think overall the best memory was when Chris Taylor, the outfielder for the Dodgers, hit the walk-off single in the Super Regional to take us to the World Series in 2011.
So my last outing at USF, I actually got pulled out of the game by the trainer and I left the mound holding my shoulder. And before that happened, all the scouts had been telling me that I was going to go early on day two, anywhere between the third and the fifth round. And then once I sent out the MRI of my shoulder saying that, like, yeah, it's not 100%, but he's still, it's fine to throw. He just has a thrower's shoulder. Some of the teams said, okay, well, we can't take you now. And other teams were saying, like, okay, yeah, that's going to drop you on our board. My, I guess, advisor at the time, like, look, just don't even watch the draft because you're going to see some guys go that you know you're better than, and we know you're better than. It's going to be frustrating. Invite some of your friends over, go fishing, something to take your mind off it. So that's what I did. I had some friends over, we went fishing, and my agent called me and said, hey, we came to terms with the Diamondbacks. They're going to take you with their next pick in the ninth round. We drove the boat in, turned the computer on, watched it go down, and then went right back out onto my parents' pontoon boat. Learning to throw every day is without a doubt the hardest thing going from college to pro ball. 'Cause in college, like, you would throw twice or three times on the weekend, and the coach would tell you, all right, don't pick up the baseball on Monday, and then probably give you Tuesday for the midweek game off. But pro ball's not like that. It's like they don't care if you threw two games in a row or three out of four. Like, you have to at least play catch. So I'd say just learning to throw while you're sore and learning to play catch every day, because pitching something where it's a lot of feel, to where every single day during your throwing you have to work on something. You can't just go out and play catch because you're not getting any better. And I would say that's the biggest jump for sure. So I'll just start from the beginning. Had no idea what was going to happen. To be honest, I wasn't even like in my head, like, oh, I might get traded. I was just so excited about the fact I had just been promoted to AA like 6 days before I was traded. So I was still living on that high of getting promoted. And then I get a phone call while I'm sitting in the hotel waiting on the bus to go to the field from the farm director from the Diamondbacks, Mike Bell. And he was like, hey, Tommy, I got good news for you and bad news for us. He goes, we just traded you for Brad Ziegler. And he told me that it was just something they needed to do because they needed an experienced pitcher for their big league team for this season, to finish the season, and that it was going to be a really good opportunity for me with the Marlins.
It couldn't hurt going home, though, like going at least to your home state.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's always nice.
I would say, like, while I was on the phone with him, it hit Twitter, and some of the guys on the team were coming down to my hotel room and knocking on the door just to say bye and say they're going to miss me and whatnot. Then when I hung up the phone, that was all going on, I was like, at first I was kind of like indifferent about it. I was like, man, this kind of sucks. Like, I got a lot of friends here. And then once it sort of settled in, like, and guys started telling me like why it was a big deal, I started to get pretty excited about it. And then, now that I'm here, I'm very excited about it.
What can the Red Sox fans expect out of Andrew Benintendi these next 3 or 4 years?
Benintendi, I'm fascinated to watch him grow. I would like to see him add even more power, but he has taken a step forward this year. I think he's, in some levels, he's destined to be a little unsung, simply because he's such a well-rounded player. But there's not one stat that will grab, say, an average fan that you can pull at him. You tell an average fan, he hits 290 and hits 16 home runs, an average fan isn't going to be that excited about that, which is too bad.
It's a shame.
In a sense, he's similar to John Olerud in that way, where I don't think the average person knew how good John Olerud was. John Olerud was a terrific player, except, of course, that year that he hit like 400 until June. But generally speaking, John Olerud was a star player, not quite Hall of Fame level, but, you know, a lot of players are very good, not Hall of Fame level, but a star for a long time. And I think that's kind of that Benintendi is going to end up as a star player for a really long time, who kind of gets underappreciated in a lot of ways. Maybe you could compare him to Fred Lynn in that way.
Ooh, Fred, that's a good one.
Because Fred Lynn was another kind of underappreciated player. He didn't have the power of Jim Rice. He didn't hit for high batting averages year in, year out. But he always got on base. He had a moderate amount of power. He could play the field. He could credibly play center field. He wasn't, you know, Willie Mays in center, but he was a solid center fielder. I mean, he won some gold gloves. And I think Benintendi's kind of in that same kind of slot as Freddie Lynn was. So hopefully a player like that can get more attention, maybe with WAR measures, because he does come out well in WAR, as did Fred Lynn and as did John Olerud. So if the public starts to adopt and buy some of these overall measures a little more.
Okay, so the international signing rules changed two off seasons ago, where you could no longer just drop as much money as you wanted on an international player. Everybody was slotted depending on their market size. So Boston, New York, Chicago teams, Los Angeles teams, they all had less money to play with on the international market than like Kansas City, Tampa Bay.
Yeah, the Orioles.
Those teams, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the White Sox dropped, they had to double what they paid for him because of the tax. They dropped $26 million on Luis Robert for a signing bonus. Then they had to double that to $52 million. So that was the last big free agency international signing that was going to be made unless it changes in the next collective bargaining agreement, whenever that is. So the White Sox have only had they're capped. They can't spend more than $300,000 on any given player in the international market. So like when Ohtani was coming over, the White Sox could only offer him $300,000. So what they have been doing, since they still have like $6 million to play with, I don't know the exact number, but they have been trading international money for legit shutdown relivers that are flying
Caleb
through. Caleb Frere from the
Caleb Frere, our a friend of the program.
Did he go on your show?
Yeah.
Dude, he is filthy, man. I had never heard of him. I mean, you're not going to hear it because, I mean, the top prospect guys, it's always going to be a starting pitcher or, you know, an offensive player. You're not going to see a lot of relievers on top 100 lists, all that stuff. So Caleb Frere, when the Sox made that trade for him, I was like, okay, let's see what he's filthy.
Absolutely he filthy. And the dude has had some bad luck in his life.
You're going to hear about that.
The Yankees, the pitching coordinator at the time, I'll leave his name out, but was very particular about how he wanted things done. Took all of my routine away. And I felt like that was why my UCL only lasted 4 months before Tommy John surgery. And it was just a complete roller coaster. You go from getting drafted out of high school to having my first ever surgery in the span of 4 months. You know, I get through the full my rookie year, go to Instructs, go to Dominican Instructs, and Dominican Instructs is where I blow it out. And but the rehab was crazy. So 2013, I spent rehabbing it. Everything went great. I had a couple setbacks early on, but it was before I was even throwing. And then, so 2014, I finished my throwing program. I show up to spring training ready for day one. I'm walking in with my bag, and a player's wife hits me with her car.
What?
Yeah. I'm getting my bag out of person. Yeah, so I had a truck, and I'm getting my baseball bag out of the bed of my truck. And she doesn't see me, so she backs into me. and she thinks she's caught like on a speed bump, and so she accelerates again, but really the speed bump's me in my pickup.
Oh shit.
Jesus.
Yeah. And so she accelerates again, trying, not intentionally doing it, but she ends up squishing me against my truck and her car. And so I did a rehab on my back for, it was about 2 months. And I did an abbreviated throwing program to get my arm ready. And my nerve wasn't ready that they had transposed during the UCL surgery. And so I did another 2 month throwing program, cortisone shot, all that stuff. So I'm supposed to pitch the last 2 weeks of GCL in 2014. And a week before I'm supposed to get in the game, I tear my quad conditioning.
Jeez.
Like you drew it up.
Yeah.
Yep. Just, and so I got the PRP injections in my quad, and the head athletic trainer's like, you're not going to be able to throw. We're just not going to send you to instruct. You've had a rough year. Go home. So I'm driving home, and I start feeling pain in my side. And I'm outside of Omaha, Nebraska, and I kick it into Sioux Falls, South Dakota, stop in the ER, and they didn't give me anything. They said maybe it's a gallbladder. So my parents drive all the way across South Dakota to come pick me up because this is at like 10:30 at night. We end up getting home the next day, go see the doctor, and my gallbladder's failing. So on September 11th, I have my gallbladder out, and that was the wrap-up of 2013 and 2014. It wasn't just TJ. It was a lot of different fun events.
Jeez, man. Yep. After all that bad luck, you know, you make your way through the minor leagues of the New York Yankees, get called up to Scranton, play, I think, one game, right? And then get sent to Chicago. That sounds like a crazy like 48 hours.
It was very crazy. You know, my fiance, she comes out every summer. She's a school teacher, and so she gets to come out every summer. And then she goes on all the road trips with us, and we just hang out all summer. It's perfect because then during the off season I can hang out with her. And we were at Cracker Barrel, got breakfast, and I got a call from my manager, and he's like, hey, you left your stuff at the field. I'm like, okay. And he's like, yeah, you're going up to AAA. So we drove up to Scranton. It's only like an hour and a half. It's not far at all from Trenton. And then I throw the next day, and I was in Scranton for like 3 days, I think. And on day two, my fiance left. She went back to Colorado, where I live now. And so I threw the first day, and then the third day I'm supposed to pitch again, maybe. And it's a 9-0 ball game. We're kicking the poop out of, I think, Gwinnett. And they say, hey, prayer, get hot. Sheffield's got 12 pitches left. We're going to go to you after his 12. Inning ends, he's got like 8 left. They call down again and say, we're going to finish up his 8 pitches. And so I'm supposed to go in like halfway through the 6th or 7th inning. And so Sheffield's got like 5 pitches left. They call down again and say, get Tarpley hot. Other lefty in the bullpen. Now, he threw 2 innings the day before. And we're all just looking around like, this is weird. We're double barrel in a 9-0 game with a lefty on the mound and 2 lefties in the pen.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it's really weird. And then they end up calling Tarpley in, tell me to keep playing catch, and then like 2 seconds later, they tell me to sit down. Game ends. I don't pitch. Going to the clubhouse, nobody talked to me. The pitching coach, manager, nothing. Like, you know, I was like, okay, whatever. I'm the new guy. And then show up the next day, do a charity softball event. It was a blast with Miracle League. And then go out to go stretch and play catch, and the manager calls me into the office and says, hey, you can't practice today. You've been traded.
Well,
yeah, and it was just nuts. Like,
just like an MLB The Show, and they just bring you in. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Just dropped it on you.
Yeah, and he's like, go get your phone, see if Brian Cashman has called you, and I did. He had called me, left me a message. And,
oh, no big deal, just Brian Cashman.
Yeah. That's incredible.
And, yeah, it was crazy.
So, yeah, that's wild. So get traded, obviously. You get to a team that, you know, obviously very, very much wanted you in Chicago. They're going to rebuild right now. They are, you know, making their way through the ranks. They got a lot of good division prospects. But you make your major league debut against the Boston Red Sox on September 2nd. That is our favorite team. We're from, you know, I'm from Rhode Island, you know, right by Fenway. And not only do you throw a scoreless inning against the best team baseball, but you strike out one of my favorite players in baseball in JB Bay, Jackie Jr., which, you know, no big deal. I remember watching that game, to be fair.
I did too. We didn't even know, like we were watching you. We were watching you. We're like, oh, that's cool. He's making his debut. And then we're like, oh, wow.
Yeah. And then you struck out him, I think, Swihart. And I was like, God damn it. Like, doing it. So can you take us through the motion of that day? You go from the emotion of being kind of confused and like, hey, I'm sitting down. I'm not warming up. No one's talking to me. I'm the new guy. Traded. Then you go over to the White Sox. You get pushed through the system. And now you're making your major league debut. Beautiful summer day against the Red Sox.
Yeah, I mean, so getting traded, you know, I'm driving from Scranton to Charlotte, which is about 10 hours. I mean, that was fun. And, you know, I'm talking to my family as I'm going down. I'm talking to my fiance, just everybody as I'm driving down this 10 hours. And the one thing that everybody kept saying was, White Sox are rebuilding. You're going to have an opportunity, and it's time to seize it. And in order to get an opportunity with the Yankees, it's a great organization, but a lot of things had to happen in order for a minor leaguer with that organization to get a chance. And with the White Sox, you know, as immediately when I got there, I knew what the plan was. Like, they were seeing who is a part of their future. And I felt like I had a month tryout in Charlotte. And the guys in Charlotte were fantastic. The staff, the Charlotte reps and my teammates were fantastic. Everybody welcomed me with open arms, and it took me like 2 days to feel a part of that team. And like, I was included with everything, and everybody was just fantastic down there. And then, so the month was great. The last pitch I threw, I got tossed on in AAA. That was something cool.
You got tossed out?
Yeah, I got tossed out. So we're playing Durham. And Austin Meadows is having a heck of a game. He's 4-for-4, 3 home runs.
That man is an athlete right there for anyone that doesn't know who Austin Meadows is.
Yeah, exactly. He's on fire tonight. And I hadn't thrown in like 2 or 3, 4 days, something like that. And we were losing, so we're just kind of cycling through the bullpen, you know, just getting whoever the freshest guy is out there. So I've got the ninth inning, and it's like 7-0. So I go out there. I get him 2-1. Go fastball up, slider away, and I want to go fastball up and in, you know, challenge him a little bit. And I get him on the hand. He's diving over the plate, get him on the hand. I get tossed immediately.
In a 7-0 game, like they wanted you, like, this guy's trying to do that, really?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not like it was the first pitch. He was the first hitter of the inning, but it was fourth pitch.
Yeah.
So
you would have hit him.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And so I get tossed immediately. Greg Zelonick, my manager, gets tossed immediately. And I'm not even mad at the Durham guys at all. Like, I don't care. Like, the dude's having a great game. I wanted to get him out. I wanted to make 4-for-5.
Yeah.
And so I start yelling at the umpire, like, I got to be able to pitch inside. That's not cool. And he's like, you don't have enough control to go inside. And so I started, I went off on the umpire, and their dugout thought I was talking to them the whole time. And so then bench is clear and all that. And in our little pile, I end up right next to Austin Meadows because he was on first base after I hit him. And I just look over, I'm like, are you good? And he's like, yeah. He's like, do you do it on purpose? I'm like, no, I wanted to go up and in to get you out. And he's like, that's where I would have gone too.
Yeah, I mean, it was. So I was, because of what my situation, because I didn't sign right when I was drafted, because I was like, well, I need to prove myself kind of thing. I went to the Cape, and so we were planning on being there. So when they, the last time they saw me was about 2 days before the deadline. So then they flew me out the next day. I got in kind of late. And the next day was the signing deadline. And so just kind of just some lateness on both parts. We were there, and I guess it kind of just panned out kind of weird. I mean, I don't even know what happened. It just kind of was a weird situation. But the paperwork got in late. And then so at that moment they said, oh, well, sorry, like, we're not signing you. So, that was kind of an interesting process. Like, again, like, that kind of goes back to, like, the whole emotional, like, roller coaster I was going through at the time. But luckily, like, things worked out in the end. We kind of got it all figured out. It wasn't an issue of, like, no, it really wasn't no one's fault. We kind of just had a little hiccup. So with that, it was kind of like, well, no, like, this is no one's really fault. No one's at fault here. I shouldn't be punished for this. And so MLB kind of was like, all right, it's okay. He can sign. So at that moment, I was like, oh, like, thank God. This is perfect. You know, I get to play now, and it all worked out in the end.
Had to be a sigh of relief for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, so I actually went. So for the week there, when they're deliberating, I actually went back to the Cape. And I was I'd flown to Baltimore, then flown back to Boston, took a bus to the Cape, then took a bus back to Boston, flew down to Florida where I started spring training. So it was kind of like I was just all like the whole week was just me traveling and living out of my suitcase basically. So it was just kind of a crazy experience.
It sounds exhausting. Like that sounds like a hell of a week.
I'm still speechless on like just how I was feeling. Like I wasn't with my parents weren't with me, which like I mean I'm 21 years old, but still at that moment it's kind of like a life altering experience almost in a way where you know it's a lot of uncertainty or like you don't really have anyone to talk to because I mean you're in a host family's house and so it was kind of a maturing moment I think for me and like just kind of understand like hey. This is a business. They're trying to figure this stuff out. You got to just be patient. So, I mean, it was crazy, but I mean, I'm here now, so whatever. It happens.
It's pretty like unique though. Like you can't really talk to anybody about it because it very rarely happens. So you definitely don't know anybody that it's happened to. So it's kind of isolating a little bit.
Yeah. And it's like when you try to tell someone like, well, what? Like that's so weird. Like, but for me, I mean, I've just put it down on the experience ticker, right? I mean,
yeah.
I don't think I'll ever go through a negotiation or whatever it was, like something like that ever again. So,
speaking of Texas, how did you end up at Texas? Obviously, you're a young kid still, so your journey's not 25 years and you're bouncing around from league to league. But you were going to go to that small school that no one remembers the name of. And then you were going to go to this academy that also no one's ever heard of. And you're from New Hampshire. So you do all those things and you end up in Austin, Texas, which is one of the funnest, most happening live towns probably in the whole country.
Oh, yeah.
How'd your journey take you there?
Well, I was committed to Virginia Tech when I was a sophomore or junior. And I just kind of started feeling like I really don't want to have any regrets in this process because I was so young. It was like I never got to look down south or out west or anything. So I just I just didn't want to have any regrets. So I decommitted and then I just made a list of the schools that I wanted to look at that I, you know, had never seen. And I made a video with Ryan Leahy. He's a Northeast Angel Scout who runs a kind of a recruiting clinic in Mass. And he knew somebody from Texas, so he sent the video, and then I went down and just kind of toured the school, and then, yeah, they just made an offer. And I committed about a week later.
I mean, that's pretty awesome. Let's be real here. Blacksburg or Austin?
Austin, hands down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a no, but Austin's one of the – there's not many places that can really compete with it as from sports or just living there. So, yeah, so you actually – didn't really have any major offers until your junior year, that summer that you just kind of said you absolutely crushed it in your area code games. What what kind of change? What happened? What went from being like, you know, I really love basketball and I'm a good basketball player to, oh man, I'm going to get drafted in the MLB.
Just the possibilities, I'd have to say. Just the lack of baseball that I've played and people taking notice in my abilities of what I can do and what I will be able to do just really made me want to focus on baseball more and give it a shot because I'd never played one sport full time.
I love that confidence. You just know you're going to be a good player. Love that little dig there. That's good for the interviews later in life. So you were obviously a big prospect coming out of the out of high school. You got drafted in the second round. That's a big deal. Like, that's not, you know, the 39th round. They kind of gave you a phone call and you said, hey, what's up? You know, we want to take a risk on you. You know, what was that process like? I mean, you're out there in a small mountain town and, you know, you're going to get drafted by Theo Epstein, the Cubs. What was that process like leading up to the, you know, second day of the draft?
It was crazy. Everything moves so fast with the draft process. I remember in the winter, I was meeting with teams, doing home visits, and then teams would come out to watch me hit, and they would come stay for little pieces of my games and then leave. So nobody really gave me any indication of where I was at with anything. And then after my high school season, I went to about 5 or 6 pre-draft workouts. I ended up playing pretty well at the Wrigley ones. So it was just a whirlwind. It was a crazy experience.
So day of the draft, you're selected in the second round by a Cubs team that's nearly 2 years removed from 2 years removed from a World Series. Take us through that day, the emotions, and everything that pretty much went on that day.
Yeah, so I was pretty nervous, I'm not going to lie. I was unsure if I was going to be a day one guy or a day two guy, and like just because of how crazy draft day actually is. And it was leading up to it, I was just with my family, and they were going to be supportive no matter what. So it was comforting knowing that, but I didn't know anything really until 15 minutes before I was going to get picked. So it was a very stressful day.
You know, Austin and I, this is obviously we love baseball. You know, the Cubs are my National League team. I have a lot of family out there, and I've been out there before, and I've been following them before they were good. But, you know, we're Red Sox fans. I'm from Rhode Island. I'm an hour away from Boston. Austin grew up a huge Red Sox fan. You got to talk to, and I'm assuming maybe even meet, the guy that brought us a World Series, which is Theo Epstein. What was it like meeting him? I mean, you always hear how, you know, just intimidating he is and high energy. And, you know, you heard the stories of him like throwing chairs, losing out on backup catchers at the trade deadline. What was it like meeting him? And did you talk to him? Did you meet him? Did you just get a text? What was that like?
No, yeah. So at my pre-draft workout, the Cubs did an awesome job of putting us in situations where we had a chance to talk and sit down with the office guys and the people who make the decisions for the draft. So I was able to talk to him and have a conversation with him and along with a lot of the other guys. It was a little intimidating at first, but he was so down to earth and did a great job of making me feel comfortable. I felt really honored to be in the same room as him, let alone get to know him a little bit.
When I got really into pitching, it was my freshman year of high school, or so just before that. Cole Hamels actually was
perfect.
Was a guy I looked at. Yeah, I looked at, and I was actually hoping this trade season we'd actually get him, so you know I could actually bounce some ideas off him about talking pitching, and he kind of pitches the same way I do. And
command.
So Cole Hamels,
like that's the big thing.
Yeah. Right. And he's got an excellent changeup, and I've been noted to have an excellent changeup. So that's kind of just where my eyes fell. And Cliff Lee was another guy, and believe it or not, Roy Halladay. And got to work with him a little bit 2 seasons ago before he passed. And, you know, it's just overall awesome dude, and would have loved to interact with him more and work with him more. But even just his little piece of advice that he gave – he gave me in terms of writing everything down when you feel good or when you feel bad, so you can always kind of revert to where things can be consistent. I mean, I'm still doing that now. I'm writing everything down every day about, hey, what felt good today? And, you know, today I'm going to be throwing for the second day. So we'll see how it feels.
Dave and I talk about it all the time, the fact that people need to pitch more now than just throw. Because you have guys like Chapman and, you know, the flamethrowers that tend to just throw. And it's not really, it's like playing catch, basically, and not pitching.
Right. And I was talking about this with a kind of a beat writer last night and this morning, because he was talking about velocity on pitchers and velocity drops on pitchers and stuff. And I kind of sent him a message. I said, you know, why is velocity nowadays such a big proponent in judging a guy? I think there's so many quality pitchers out there that know how to pitch with their 94, but throw down at 89, or, you know, bring it up. They're raising and lower. It's almost in a way creating a different pitch. So I we talked for a good while, and I think just the understanding of velo is great as a weapon. If you got velo, if you could throw 98 and plus, 97 plus, that is an advantage. But again, if you get below that threshold that following year, you're going to see some problems because you're not commanding the ball and your secondary stuff isn't as good. And so when you're able to pitch and you're able to, you know, raise speeds and lower speeds, I feel like there's an extra benefit to that. And that's almost adding like three pitches to your arsenal. And so, yeah, I may not throw hard at times. You know, there was plenty of times during the season that I pitched a, you know, 93 to 95. It's not saying I don't have velo. I just know when to use it and when to not use it. And there's guys that I can get away with stuff. If I'm pitching at the top of the zone, I'm going to try to bring some heat. But then again, if I'm throwing at the top of the zone, I got to be careful with where I put it. So that's where kind of the decision factor of what to add and what to subtract, really comes into play. And I think there's a lot of pitchers out there, you know, Chase DeYoung, who's now in the Twins organization, does it pretty well. Andrew Moore, who's in the Rays organization, he does a great job of it. But you know, and just I just think there's a lot of pitchers out there that are overlooked or even underrated that are able to pitch. I mean, you look at a guy in low A for us is Parkinson. He had an outstanding year. He was pitcher of the Phillies organization, and he threw, I think, max 89, maybe 91 throughout the season, but he had a no-hitter. It might have been a perfect game. I don't know. I think it was a no-hitter for sure. But the guy wasn't scary in terms of velo. The guy could command his fastball. He's got decent secondary stuff, and it's not that he's going to overpower a hitter. He's going to outthink him, and I think those guys are really underrated at the big league level. And, you know, you see a guy like, you know, you see a guy make his major league debut and he can, you know, throw the ball pretty, you know, pretty hard. You get to the big leagues, you got those nerves going, you get that antsiness, you're going to throw a little bit harder, but what's going to happen? Stuff's going to flatten out. Stuff's going to be up in the zone. You're not going to be able to locate as good. So you got to be able to find a way to slow yourself down and be able to pitch with command first and then add and subtract, if you will, when the time comes for that.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.